This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
This is your host, Sophia Ray, on People Speak. Tonight, we are with Tim Boyd at the Theosophical Society. You can call in by listening through phone at 716-748-0144, or you can log in by computer, smartphone at bbsradio.com. Click on your listen icon. Navigate to Station 2. You can also call in your questions at toll-free 1-888-429-5471. Tim Boyd is the president of the Theosophical Society of America and the International Society located in India. Part of his duties are answering correspondence, meeting with people, writing, lecturing, and talking. He also is guiding and giving instructions on important matters relating to the society, taking care of legal and social matters. The society is dedicated to promoting the unity of humanity, fostering religious, racial understanding by encouraging the study of religion, philosophy, science, and the arts. I thank you. It's a privilege, Mr. Boyd, to have you here with us tonight.
Well, Sophia, I want to thank you for asking me for coming on.
You're very welcome. It's an honor to have you here with us. We have a lot of questions that the numerous groups I have reached out to. You have to excuse me at this moment. I'm a little nervous. But I would like to get through a lot of these questions. There's quite a few. We have a lot of interesting guests with us tonight. How was your recent elections? How did that feel? Because I understand you were on two ballots, and you have been the TSA president since 2011. Is that correct? And you are now in your second term with the TSA?
That's right.
And how was the, when you got nominated for India, how was that? Were you expecting that, or... did you want to be on the ballot?
Well, the way the Theosophical Society works, it's a various spiritual organizations operate in different ways, but with the Theosophical Society, it's always been a democratic format. So it's elected, the presidency is elected in every section around the world, as well as for the international. One of the features of the Theosophical Society is that once elected, there are the terms go for 7 years, but the terms can go for as many 7-year times as a person continues to want to run or continues to be elected. So in the case of our previous president, Radha Bernier, she was the longest-serving president in the history of the TS. So she actually died in office in October.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
Yeah, but she was 91 years old, I think, so she lived a full life. But it was one of those things that was what precipitated this election process. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't something that was anticipated for the particular time by anyone. So it was something we sort of, the society was sort of catapulted into.
Well, I understand there has, you know, with the recent election, there's been some challenges regarding the irregularities in the Indian section. How do you plan to address, you know, those irregularities and, you know, those small issues that's been occurring?
Yeah, well, it's one of those unfortunate things. Within the Theosophical Society, it's not the first time that something like this has been heard of.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of fortunate in this particular election, at least because the results of the election were so, the numbers were so large that at least there's no question about the legitimacy of the actual election of my serving in this position. Mm-hmm. So what you end up finding yourself having to focus on is trying to discover what it is that's actually being pointed at. It has been almost specifically the main complaints or rumors that have come up have regarded the election process within India itself. So that's something that, you know, when they came in, they were addressed to the Indian section.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is in Adyar, correct me if I'm wrong, correct?
Yeah, Adyar is where the international headquarters is. But the Indian section, of course, is all of India.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things that has arisen. It's rather difficult in elections within the Theosophical Society, as in elections in state and local government, to, you know, it takes some level of something specific that you can look at in order to kind of root out some of these things. So that's one of the things that always seems to be the more difficult part.
Okay. Since we're on the subject, okay, I have, since I meant earlier, just mentioned that I have accumulated some questions through various theosophical groups, and these are coming from social networkings of many branches of theosophy. Some independent and some are non-independent. And, you know, some have kind of pressed me about the issue of letters being circulated regarding the management of the headquarters at Adyar and some of the practices towards that. Do you have any plans to review that management and the issues that have been raising up throughout, you know, I'm not sure how long it's been going up, but it seems quite a while.
Do you have any idea of what specific issues we're talking about here?
You know, the specific issues of the management of at the headquarters.
The management in terms of the
practices towards staff, or you know, the treatment of staff. I'm not quite sure. Not many wanted to get into specific detail, but that's their question.
Well, I guess one of the things I even find myself having to keep in mind for myself is that I've been in this position for about 4 months now.
Mm-hmm.
So to a certain extent, the seat in my office is not really warm yet. So there are a lot of things that I find myself in the process of having to bring myself up to speed about.
Mm-hmm.
You have, you know, over a 33-year period, you've had one person who has served as president, and in any organization, each person brings their own particular imprint to the society. So in this sort of transition period, it's something where I'm having to kind of catch up to what that imprint has been, and also take a look at the ways in which I think that, you know, there's going to be some changes, some alterations in the way that things have been done. It's also true that, you know, from the perspective of living in the United States, there's a certain way and a certain approach that we have adopted in business and in work relations that is not necessarily carried over around the world. So to some extent, it's something where you want to kind of... You talk about making East and West meet. So that's one of those areas where you would like to have a meeting in terms of the Western practices and Eastern as well. The way it works at Adyar, you have basically it's a 250-acre compound in the city of Chennai. Over the years, since the purchase of the Adyar property by the founders of the Theosophical Society, which, if I'm not mistaken, was in 1882. The city of, it was purchased, it was on completely on the outskirts of the city of what was then Madras. Now that's a city of 7 million people that's grown up around this this compound. So you have workers who are involved in the upkeep of the compound. You have numerous buildings that need to be maintained. You have administrative staff. You have a publishing house. You have many different things going on in this Adyar complex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's kind of retreat back a little bit. There's a lot of confusion with the SFB, especially with those who have never heard it before. In your own words, you know, this is probably one of the most popular questions for a theosophist. What is theosophy? Is it a religion? Can you explain to our listeners tonight what is theosophy and, you know, what makes it different?
Well, it's certainly not a religion per se, although it is deeply involved in the core of all religions. Theosophy is described in numerous ways. One of the difficulties is that it's not, it has never been just pinned down to one formulaic presentation. But you know, one of the ways it's been described is that theosophy is the ageless wisdom that has been tested and verified by generations of seers and sages. So it's one of those things that speaks about eternal verities. So part of the difficulty in pinning it down is that it cuts across all fields of human knowledge. Really, it's something that describes the nature of the human being and the universe that we live in, and it's founded in an essential principle of oneness, so the unity of all life, the universal brotherhood of all human beings, are sort of the core principles that are at work there. Always it's something that it can be approached at a superficial level or it can be approached at its depths. But one of the things that people have found is that it has sort of a transformative transformative power in their lives.
Is this a spiritual power? I don't mean to interrupt, but like a spiritual power?
Okay. Yeah, you could say it's a spiritual power. You know, more and more I find myself not moving away from the word spiritual, because I think that's an accurate way of describing it. But I also tend to feel like when we just say spiritual, sometimes it's something that excludes people, in the sense that many people have a longing and an understanding of truth, but they don't necessarily put it in terms of spirituality. So perhaps even a preferable term sometimes would be just consciousness. So the unfoldment of the deeper layers of consciousness is what it's about.
You know, when you say consciousness, you know, I'm thinking inner dimensions. What do you think?
You said inner dimensions?
Yeah, it's like inner conscious dimensions. You know, is that kind of, are you resonating with that or no?
Well, I think that could be, that's a way that it could certainly be put, because, you know, really what it's about is the attempt to understand and to experience the deeper aspects of consciousness. So, you know, beyond just the physical, beyond just the emotions, and even beyond the mind, is the place where this sort of transformation process takes place. I think a lot of people are getting worldwide are starting to turn on to this sort of deeper way of seeing things.
How can we expand the awareness of the theosophical aims, aspirations within the general public? You know, and how would the general public be benefited through the theosophical experience or the theosophical way?
Well, I think largely a lot of that benefit's already taking place. What you have to understand is that the theosophical theosophy in its present form was sort of reintroduced to the popular culture in 1875. At that time, its ideas were revolutionary, really. The idea that there is a universal human family is something that's very normal in 2014, but in colonial India in 1875, the idea that there was a certain equality and oneness of all human beings was an idea that was not only foreign, but it was something that was resisted worldwide. So that's something that has kind of taken, over time, it's taken root and has become the norm in human thinking. If you run into someone today who tells you that that people around the world are in fact unequal and not one based on race, religion, creed, sex, that's someone who you start to think of as being rather backwards because it's taken such deep root now. Some of the other ideas that the teachings of theosophy brought into the popular consciousness were the idea that we're multidimensional beings. And this is a multidimensional universe. It's not just a physical realm. And we're able to function at those deeper levels of our being as well. This is an idea that is widespread in the world today. But we take it as something that is normal. But this is something that was completely revolutionary at the time that H.P. Blavatsky and the others of her time were introducing these ideas. So I think in many ways, much of what the Theosophical Society came into the world to accomplish on certain levels has been accomplished. The concepts have been broadly spread. I think the work now is shifting in the sense that the conceptual groundwork is out there. And people can access it from many, many different directions. Ideas about meditation, ideas about the expansive quality of the inner life, and it's discovered in dreams, in astral sorts of matters. Those are normal ideas. So now I think the trend and the need is to go beyond just knowing the ideas and really move that next step, which is actually living the life or cultivating the actual experience of what these teachings are talking about. And that's a very different thing from just knowledge.
Absolutely. You know, you brought up a few good points, especially with the founders. Now, people are kind of confused about, you know, the founders. HBB, Olcott, Judge, they were the founders of the United States sector, correct? America sector. But we're getting a caller in the line here. But before I go to this caller here, I want to have you touch up on the founders, where they come from, how they brought this idea to America, where it originally comes from.
Well, the Theosophical Society was founded in New York City in 1875. There are a number of people who were involved in that founding, but the ones who were the principal founders really were the ones that you named, Blavatsky, Olcott, and William Quan Judge. And they took no credit for bringing something new to the world, because they would say that theosophy is as old as humanity itself. But what was brought was a contemporary expression of these ageless wisdom teachings. That was something that was very new, and that was something that was became theosophy. But these are things that have been with us as long as there has been a humanity. But now, as with each stage, each cycle in the growth of humanity, there are different needs and a different capacities for understanding. So this was the one that was felt was most suited to our particular phase of growth.
All right, on that note, this is Sophia Ray, and I got a caller on the line from Mike in California. Mike, you're on.
Hello, thank you so much. Hello, Tim. You know, I was a very serious young high school student, and I used to listen to my local radio station. Among them, some of the people they'd play tapes of were Alan Watts and Krishnamurti. And I remember Krishnamurti being associated with the Theosophical Society. He was one of my favorite speakers. I was wondering, what were Tim's early beginnings? Was he a Christian, or how did he get into theosophy?
What were my early beginnings?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think in some ways I was fortunate. I suppose any way that you come to something that's of value, you're fortunate. But my particular path did not come through religion. My family was not particularly religious, although they did feel that we should be exposed to religion. So they, they were diligent about sending us to Sunday school early in life until we decided, each one decided for themselves, but I decided that it wasn't really it wasn't really touching me in the way that was worth missing playing football with my friends on Sunday. So that stopped. But, for me, it was something that in college, I guess I started to have some level of questioning. I didn't have any concept about where to look or that there was such a thing as theosophy. But, I was starting to question, just amorphous sorts of questions were coming up. I was fortunate enough to, coincidentally, I guess you would say, meet someone who was quite deeply involved with theosophy and the Theosophical Society, and also someone who was quite open to working with younger people. So out of that contact, it exposed me to theosophy. It also enabled me to come to a deeper appreciation of it, and I found it was something that really worked for me. It was profound. As I explored it, it answered many of the questions that I had. Somehow or another, I couldn't quite come to the end of its depths. So that's been a process that's been going on for about 40 plus years now.
By the way, Tim, I saw your profile and pick headline at BBS Radio. You look a lot like President Obama. I don't mean that in a bad way. I consider President Obama a very distinguished, handsome-looking guy. Anyway, thank you so much.
You might be surprised. You might not be surprised. I do hear that from time to time. One of the things I do find myself saying, though, is that President Obama is younger than me. So if anyone looks like anyone, he looks like me.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
It is true. It is true. You guys resemble one another. And not only that, you both are chief commanders in office as well. That is very interesting.
This is the Obama time, I guess.
The age of Obama, indeed. Do you have any relation to, Jiddu Krishnamurti?
Do I have any relation?
Mm-hmm. Any bloodline connections?
Oh, no. No, I don't.
No?
Why? I've never heard that question. What brought that to mind?
You know, I've heard that as a rumor somewhere down the grapevine. Not quite sure where I remember it coming from, so I thought I would clear that up with you personally so there was no misunderstandings.
Maybe I should claim that. I think that might up my stock.
Well, I need to cut into a break right now. Sorry to cut you off here. You are listening to The People Speak with your host, Sophia Ray. We are with President Tim Boyd of the Theosophical Society. We will be back in just a moment.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, PalTalk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 PalTalk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining PalTalk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive, but there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who are forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBSRadio.com.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please. Give to the World Food Program.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
And we're back. This is your host, Sophia Ray, and we are here with Mr. Boyd, the president of the Theosophical Society internationally and in America. Welcome back, Boyd.
Thank you. You know, if you don't mind, I would not object if you called me Tim.
Okay, Tim. Thank you. I appreciate that. Let's retract back on HPB. You know, because I want to bring up something that just seems important. And what I'm talking about here is throughout the last century, there has been multiple groups who have tried to distort or who have distorted the teachings of Blavatsky. Can the society prevent this from occurring? Has there been any programs created specifically from keeping her teachings, in the essence as she taught them?
Well, I think it's one of the unfortunate but undeniable features of human beings that we have the capacity to distort anything. There's nothing too pure, nothing too holy. As Einstein said, there's nothing so simple that it cannot be misunderstood. So we have that capacity. And so given that, it's necessary that things are going to stray. It's also necessary that part of the function of the Theosophical Society is to make sure that the teachings in terms of the written form are continually available and are true to their way of being presented. And then from that, people can study them in more depth, arrive at their own conclusions. Obviously, I think one of the things that happens, no matter who it is, Jesus gave certain teachings. Out of that came Christianity, and out of that came a whole theology and a whole system of beliefs that oftentimes bears little resemblance to his actual teachings. Mm-hmm. The farther we get away from the source of things, it seems as if often there's a much more room for things to be distorted or sometimes even elaborated upon in positive ways. So both those things can happen.
I'm getting some questions coming in from the internet community. I have one that's coming in from Tom in USA. He's asking, does the knowledge tapping the collective conscious of man, or the universe itself? I guess he's asking if it is coming from the universe or... Understand.
Yeah, the question is what's the source of this knowledge?
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that probably any one of us who has some deeper experience of awakening, you start to find that the knowledge that we talk about, it's ever present. It's always here. The only thing that prevents us from being aware of it is that for various reasons we find ourselves incapable to perceive it. Very often the most common reason for that is because we tend to be so self-absorbed, so engrossed in our own various sorts of worries and concerns that it's difficult to see anything else. Part of the reason why in most of the spiritual practices of the world, some form of quieting of the mind is essential, is because only then, only when we find a way to actually focus the mind and then eventually still the mind, it's only then that we can see what actually lies behind and beyond the mind. And as long as we're throwing up currents of thought, clouds of thought, you can't see the sky. So that's been something that has been the recommendation of spiritual practices throughout time. In order to perceive a knowledge or a wisdom that's ever present, we have to be able to become still.
Oh, that was beautiful. Very well said. Thank you for that. I agree. Mm-hmm. Rob in California, his question, does the guest believe L. Ron Hubbard was sane?
Does who believe?
He wants to know if you believe L. Ron Hubbard. Are you
was
familiar?
Sane. Yeah, with yes. Scientology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually, I don't know enough about his history to comment one way or another. I do know that there are many people who have highly regarded what he had to say. I personally have no, I can't comment intelligently because it's not something that I've ever delved into.
Okay, I understand. Bobby in Ireland is asking, if the society has at its core the concept of brotherhood of man, what do you think of those who try to distort the teachings of the society? For an example, like those distorted by Nazism concerning Aryan being a superior race, do you condone these groups and the division they have caused with the society?
No. I mean, obviously.
Right.
Untruth and whatever is untrue, obviously you don't condone. And, you know, untruth can occur from deliberate efforts, as was the case with the sort of Nazi appropriation of deeper concepts. And it can occur through, you know, just ignorance or undeveloped, you know, immature sort of thinking. So none of those things can you condone. Whether can you prevent that from occurring? That I don't know either. I think that one of the difficulties that many people face who have some sort of a deeper vision is that, you know, Buddha lived, Jesus lived, you have Muhammad who lived, you have all sorts of very wise people, men and women who have been here, who have all given profound messages, often very simple truths, and it seems as if we're no closer as a human family to realizing those now than 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 years ago. But there's not much you can do about that. But what you can do is cultivate your own consciousness so that in the face of all of these things, at least there is one island of peace in your surroundings that affects the others around you. And I think that's the sort of responsibility that we all have to take on ourselves.
Absolutely. I'm getting a question coming in from the Google community. James Bath, does Theosophy incorporate any teachers of Shabd sound current?
Certainly. Yeah. I mean, vibration, rightly understood, is the basis of the universe. So, you know, in the Bible is the words, in the beginning was the word, was the vibratory impulse that set all things into motion. So obviously some sort of understanding of that can be something that can be very effective just in terms of our own practice and the effect it has on our own consciousness and those around us. So certainly there are teachings related to sound.
Leadbeater was our Grady Jeff. Would you name those as, you know, some phenomenal teachers within the Theosophical, you know, in the past?
Well, Gurdjieff didn't come specifically out of the Theosophical Society, but mm-hmm. obviously he was also influenced by that. But yeah, these are people who had their own particular profound vision of these truths. Leadbeater was a deeply clairvoyant man. So a lot of what he did, he described from a clairvoyant point of view, some of the forms of the inner world and some of the effects, for instance, that are generated by our thinking, by our emotion. And, you know, it gives the clear idea that the range of our effects on the world is much more expansive than most people allow themselves to imagine. Along with that comes a certain responsibility for how we use our emotions, how we use our thoughts. And these are things that really, at the core of Theosophy, it's not just understanding these things, but it's using them for the upliftment of humanity. That's really what the core of it is. It's not just knowledge. It's service or altruism is really what the core of the Theosophical teachings give to humanity.
I agree. It is for humanity. Absolutely, I can't agree with you more. You know, speaking of Leadbeater, and Leadbeater, correct me if I'm wrong again, he was a student of Blavatsky, correct?
Yeah, he knew her in her lifetime.
And so, and also, I wanted to, you know, I know I don't want to, you know, go across any lines here.
Why not?
But let's talk about this concept of world teacher. Can you just, you know, explain this to me here?
Yeah. Well, one of the features of many spiritual and religious practices in the world is the idea that periodically you have world teachers that appear, that always there are, you know, there's no time in the world where there are not great beings, but, you know, some of the greatest beings are spoken of. One of the words used is avatar. So it's like as incarnation of God, you could say. And so that's something that is spoken of as occurring periodically. The Bible has the way of describing it about, you know, when does the Messiah appear, and, you know, the various sorts of terms. When, you know, nature is out of balance, when human relations are out of balance, then is when that person appears. That's something that is part of the cycles that we talk about of human evolution, that from time to time, there's a time and a moment when it is appropriate for a new energy and a new direction in human unfoldment. And at those times is when you find these great beings often appearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. Do we have a world teacher today?
I can say. Very often in Tibetan practice, they have the idea of, for instance, the Dalai Lama is spoken of as an incarnation of an enlightened being, mm-hmm. Avalokiteshvara, one of the Buddhas of compassion. And so he's looked at as an incarnation of that enlightened being. It's also possible for this sort of level of enlightenment to appear simultaneously in many people. So, you know, very often we look for the one great person, and sometimes perhaps that's not the appropriate way to look. Sometimes what may be happening is that this sort of a divine or elevated consciousness is appearing through different movements of people in the world. And so it takes a little bit more refined sensibility to be able to perceive its movements in the world. And again, the way that we find ourselves doing that reliably, it can only occur when, to some degree, we have been able to do the work within our own consciousness to come to some level of stability, of right perception, and of peace. Because until that happens, basically all we're seeing is the currents that we're projecting into the world. Absolutely. And so that's something that's very different. Seeing what it is that we're projecting is very different from seeing what is.
It is very different. It is very, very different. Roger in Kentucky. Tim, do you believe in government conspiracies such as 9/11 and anthrax being the inside jobs or other forms of corruption? Has government opposed the Theosophical Society at all?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I do know that as long as there are people, as long as there are at least three people in the world, there are probably some level of behind-the-scenes interactions going on.
So
I think we have more than three people in the world. So that's always something that is not only a possibility, but it's for sure that everything that happens, everybody is not aware of all the details of it. Even in a family, that's true. So I have, I have no illusions that that's not going on now. Very often I hear about people's different ideas about what the particular conspiracies are. And I find myself open to listen. One of the difficulties I have is that very often, having heard this concept of the particular conspiracy, it always comes back to, what can I do? It's also true for people. And I know many very spiritual people who are very caught up in predictions about calamities that are yet to come. And, you know, can talk about it in very precise and analytical terms. And I always come back to, okay, if that's true, then what can I do? And so for me, maybe it's just that I'm a little bit too simplistic. But for me, when I look at what can I do, to a certain extent, I can acquaint myself with what I view as the essential problem.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the essential problem is less the fact that people are misusing knowledge as the why. Why do we misuse? Why do we distort? And to me, that comes down to, it always comes back to a very fundamental sort of, I guess, not to, I don't want to pretty it up, so a fundamental ignorance on the part of us as human beings. We live in a world of illusions. We are constantly in the process of creating illusions. And to try to free ourselves from that is a full-time job. And so for me, you know, I do what I can on the political sphere. I do what I can in the social sphere. You know, I'm out here doing different things in terms of service work. But the real work for me is always, how do I actually see what's real? You know, the prayer that was said, the ancient prayer is, may I hear what I hear, may I see what I see. The things that are right in front of me, may I actually see it clearly, and then I can actually be effective. Until then, you know, basically I'm fighting against symptoms and not causes.
Let's go, and before the show's close out, you know, it doesn't seem like I have enough time with you today. I wish we can, you know, just magically conjure up some more.
I'll start giving shorter answers.
No. Don't do that. Don't do that, please. Regarding the society as an organization, how can we reach out across the world to our young people and, you know, so they can consider our ideas and tenets as, you know, in the theosophical view, you know, it kind of bring in more young people and, you know, expand theosophy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's always been something of a focus, and it's always been something that is always just a little bit beyond the reach, it seems. I can't say that theosophy is something that requires a certain, perhaps, maturity, but it's something that it certainly does help with. And so very often, when I know when I was young, one of the things that was, I was about more about doing. You know, if you could get me to do something, then that's something that would appeal to me. A lot of what you find with the approach to theosophy is more of a study, listening, talking, those sorts of approaches to coming to the knowledge. And that's not something that readily appeals to your average younger person. I think one of the things that has been quite effective has been the applications. So where you come to the point of meditation practice, that's often something that people are interested in. When you come to actual hands-on sorts of acts of service, that's something where, you know, theosophy in action is often something that speaks to younger people. And so you have the theosophical order of service, mm-hmm. which really is, you could say it's like the service arm of the Theosophical Society, where around the world you have groups that come together to specifically serve human need and to try and alleviate suffering in very practical ways. So that's something that often attracts young people.
Yes, suffering is a big thing today, and I think it's, you know, overweighing on people. And I know Buddha had taught a lot about suffering and that pain. But I want to continue on here. As you know, towards the members that are already in the society, how can we attract and get their interest back and to be part of, you know, the movement, the group, just the whole idea?
Well, I mean, I find there's quite a bit of enthusiasm. As I say, I was traveling through Europe and then into India over the past month or so. And I find there's quite a bit of enthusiasm for this theosophical movement. One of the things that has, in fact, happened is that it has broadened. So there's the Theosophical Society with its headquarters in Adyar, which is, of course, the largest theosophical organization. But over the lifetime of the Theosophical Society, there have been numerous sorts of groups that have kind of branched off from it and went out in the world and were functioning in their particular ways. Now what you're finding is that there are a lot of these groups that see value in actually coming together and working together. And so that's something that is also sort of a promising sign of the times.
Let me ask you, how can we make better use of social media and other means to better communicate with other, with the leadership to facilitate the democratic ideals expressed by our founders and reinforced by, like, let's say, Master K.H., especially with the letter to Bessonet, quote, misleading secrecy has given the death blow to numerous organizations, unquote.
Yeah. I think one of the great advantages that we have in an internet age is that it makes it possible for things to become known quite quickly. It's a double-edged sword because bad information gets known as easily as correct information. But still, that's the nature of the time, so we have to work with it. But I do, I mean, one of the things that will be, forthcoming over time with our Adyar Society is a greater use of internet technology for this sort of more immediate communication and ready access to information. It's something we've been doing here in the United States and have steadily been, as things come up, we've been refining it more and more so that the type of transparency that people talk about is really just the norm. Obviously, it's something that, we're going to have to institute a lot of those things in India. Internet technology is something that's coming a little bit slowly to the international society, but as it moves along, I think it'll start to become very clear that, there are no hidden agendas and there's no, none of the things that actually come about from not being exposed to light. Obviously, now if we were to depend on letter writing to get all the information out, it would be slow and costly. So that day is gone. So I just think that given time, it's going to be very clear, step by step, that this is that the openness and the information availability that the internet can give is something that's going to be just the norm for the Theosophical Society. I can't say like every place else, but like it should be.
Right. I got a question from Samantha in Chicago. What specific doctrines do Theosophists believe in?
Well, one of the beauties of Theosophy is that there is no requirement to believe in any specific doctrine except in the oneness of all life, the universality of the human family, for instance, the non-division of all life forms is something that is a basic sort of, is the one basic. Beyond that, you would find that most people who have studied it find themselves with some level of attraction to ideas such as cause and effect at the level of at all levels, so at the spiritual level as well as at the physical level. So karma, many people have become convinced of the value of thinking in terms of cycles, both small cycles and grand cycles. So cycles such as reincarnation, birth, living a life, death, and then reincarnating yet again, and grander cycles than that. So there's some basic ideas such as that that have great depth, and as you explore them, you can convince yourself or not of their value.
Mm-hmm. There's a question that's coming in. This question is from a member of one of the Yahoo independent groups, and they're asking, what should be the society's business model and strategic plan for financial health and growth?
Well, the model to date has been one of members who have felt so inclined donating, or, you know, bequests have been something that have sort of fueled its operation over time. It's not an organization that is able to keep its doors open by virtue of the dues that are charged. That's really something that is just, you know, just done to really kind of cover the expenses in terms of membership outreach. So, I mean, the model to date has been one of people who have found value in the theosophical teachings and in the society have seen fit to donate over time. And we have had some people who have been very generous and substantial in that respect. You know, it's not a business, so we're not in the out there selling anything. And so to a large degree, it depends on the sense that there is a value that is worth supporting. And those people have traditionally stepped forward.
Can you tell people who are interested in becoming a member, how can they go about becoming a member?
Well, if you're talking about the Theosophical Society in America, you could just go to theosophical.org, which is the website. And there'd be information there about membership. You'd also be able to find information about the Theosophical Society itself. If you're interested in joining in other parts of the world, you can just Google Theosophical Society, Ireland, France, India, wherever you happen to be. And then you should be able to find information in that way.
Great, great. Before I close up the show today, are there any upcoming events or special dates that we should know about?
Well, if you had asked me this day before yesterday, we just had a gathering out here for about 2,000 people at the Theosophical Society in America, Theosofest. It's an annual event. Other than that, here in the U.S., we have opened our program season. So if you're in the Wheaton area, you can come to talks. Otherwise, again, the best way to do it would be to go to theosophical.org. And our programs, many of them which are online programs, webinars, webcasts, you can tune into from anywhere in the world.
That's great. I don't have enough time with you tonight. I wish we had more time. Tim, would you be willing to come back again as a guest?
Only because you're such a good interviewer, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, though.
Yeah, I really appreciate you here so much. Thank you. Thank you and thank you. I am Sophia Ray, your host tonight on The People Speak. We are closing up with our guest, Mr. Tim Boyd, the Theosophical President of America and India. Our next week guest is, I believe it's, Carrie Wedler, a YouTube producer, writer, blogger, and activist. Please be sure to tune in to us next week, 9 p.m. Eastern. You have a good night, folks, and thank you for listening.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest, to the Gulf. Gulf Stream water has. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.